from the LA Times Studios and The Real, I'm Mark Olson. And, you know, so far this podcast has focused on movies and television, but it seems like if we're talking about kind of the world of entertainment for this week, we really have to somehow grapple with the performance of Beyoncé at Coachella this past weekend. And so to sort of get into that and what that means, I'm joined here by two of my colleagues.
I am the Dean of Pledges of Beehive University, Travell Anderson.
Oh, wow, Travell. That's okay. Well, I'm Garrett Kennedy, and I mean, I guess I would be what, president?
Yes. President.
Co-founder of the Beehive. I mean, I don't know. Yes.
So, Garrett, I'm excited to have you here because you were physically present at Coachella.
Yes, in the desert, 5 feet away from Bee. I'm still alive.
Well, now, give me some sense of that. I mean, she's put on performances for award shows, for last year, the Super Bowl halftime show. But even as a casual Beyoncé fan, something about this performance felt bigger, felt special, felt different.
It was different immediately. And the thing that I thought about that was so brilliant of what Beyoncé did was she came to Coachella and sort of did two performances at the same time. You know, she's doing this show for this audience that's there, but she was really doing it for the people that were at home. And she knows that audience, which is very Black, is going to stay up and watch her and wants to see what she's going to do since it has been 2 years that she's been on stage. So when you look at, you know, if you watch the stream and if you see how the camera was choreographed to do everything that she was doing, I mean, she really was in real time doing a huge TV spectacle as well as a typical concert. It's just, it was unreal.
But now, being in the audience, did you feel that you were being not performed to in some way? Like, or was it really like as much for you right there in front of it as it was for people who were watching elsewhere?
It's funny because it's one of those things where I knew I was being performed to because she was singing to Black people that night. And there was no question about it. She was performing for her Black audience that night. And she was allowing an audience like Coachella, which is going to be predominantly white, to not only just get an education, but sort of be along for the ride and say, I'm actually doing this for a greater good. And that, I mean, it's a huge risk. And, you know, there was a part of it where, I mean, when she does, you know, Lift Her Voice and Sing, which is, you know, the Black national anthem, this couple from Nova Scotia was next to me and the girl leans and she's like, oh, is that her new single? And
see?
I'm like, that alone tells you everything of what that night was going to be, where it's really, you can separate that into two different things. Black folks really saw a different type of performance just because of the levels of references that were in it. There were so many that was packed into it. And then her casual fans or even just her huge fans, they might not have gotten all of it. They might have been, oh, there's great that there's this band on stage, but they don't know where this dancing is coming from. They don't know the spirit of where this is coming from or the references or, oh, my God, you know, Beyonce's a sorority now, which I don't really think people caught at the time on stage because, you know, there was a couple of moments where, you know, you really didn't get to see the letters, you know, if you were in the audience until, you know, she was doing Top Off and, you know, the camera came on top of her and you could see the letters, you know, below her. And if you got really close, you could see it on her sweatshirt. But I don't think a lot of people there were getting it. And I don't think, unless you knew these references, once they started stepping, you had no idea what was happening.
Travell, you were watching the live stream at home.
I was.
And the performance begins with her explicitly dressed as and sort of placing herself as a desert queen. Mm-hmm. And then there's this sort of
Nefertiti vibe.
Yes, Nefertiti.
Cleopatra.
And there's a long tracking shot. The camera's, you know, moving along her dancers. She has this long walk along a catwalk until she sort of gets to the main stage. Did you, watching it at home, kind of feel right away that this was kind of different and special? Like, what for you was the experience of watching the show like at home?
I think it's so funny because we often, like, refer to Beyoncé as a queen. And sometimes she kind of shoulders that persona. But I felt like she was leaning very full much into it with this performance. And even from the top of the performance, as she's doing that walk, it's like a Creole, New Orleans, you know, second line band sound that's coming down. That's what made me feel like, oh, she's ready. She's going to give it to us. And she did. I was literally in my bed watching this, and I had to stand up. Like, I had to get up out of my bed. I was on my phone, had to get up out of my bed. I had to put it on the TV because I was like, this is a moment right here. This is everything. And then when the marching band comes out, I was just like, oh, she's giving us a smooth homecoming performance right now. Like, this is a pure HBCU homecoming right now.
Tell me a little bit about that, about the sort of matrix of references that she was dealing with of the HBCUs, the historically black mm-hmm. colleges. Within the sort of the world of Beyoncé, mm-hmm. what did it mean that that's what she decided to focus on Saturday night?
Well, I think, you know, the history of HBCUs, for those who, you know, aren't familiar, HBCUs, historically black colleges and universities, were institutions that were founded because black folks couldn't go to all the other institutions that were already there. And so you had a lot of primarily, you know, rich white people who were abolitionists, for example, who were giving money to these communities to build their own institutions. I happened to attend one of the best, if not the best, Morehouse College in Atlanta, Georgia. Some of our famous alumni include Martin Luther King Jr., Spike Lee, and yours truly.
Go ahead.
You know, slight flex. anyway, and so that's the history of these institutions. And at these institutions, there basically is a culture that has been created over the years where we are bred to kind of live and thrive in our blackness and in our abilities to kind of come together and uplift our entire community. It's the whole talented 10th idea. The idea at HBCUs is that you can come here and be yourself without the white gaze, and we will still train you and prepare you to go into the world and still deal with the white gaze, but deal with who you are. I think it's so beautiful that Beyoncé not only tapped into, because she tapped into it with her HBCU scholarship thing that she did. Was it last year? She mm-hmm. first did it. It was two HBCUs and then I think two predominantly white institutions, I think maybe. And then this year, after her performance, she kind of re-upped it with scholarships to four other HBCUs. But just seeing that kind of culture lifted up in that way on that particular stage at Coachella, I think is one of those things that for me as an HBCU grad, like I was just like so overcome with like emotion.
Garrick, when the pyramid rig rose up and she kind of revealed what was on stage, all those dancers, all that band, what was like, because I, for myself, the thing I kept thinking that was like going to be a part of the show. And it took a while for just me as a viewer to realize like, oh no, this is the whole show. And the way that she rearranged all of her hits to for march a marching band. Tell me a little bit about just the sheer sort of like artistic effort of what she put into this, and maybe for you what that means and like what she's doing that she puts so much into a single performance like this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing with Beyoncé is she's someone who has done it all and continues to find ways to top herself. And so when you're stepping to a space like Coachella, you know, a lot of artists, and this isn't, I don't think this is a bad thing, but a lot of artists are doing either truncated versions of their tour or, you know, they might just do more stripped down songs or something. But she completely reimagine what a festival moment should be. And she knew, you know, going back to what I said earlier, she knew that she's going to have a major subset of her audience. Probably more of her audience is going to be at home watching this than in the desert, in the elements. And you can hear in my throat why a lot of people aren't out there. You know, but so knowing that, you know, I think after the Formation tour, which if you saw that show, it was her, as Travell said earlier, you know, leaning fully into her position as this regal being. You know, we've always prop her up. And, you know, a lot of it is just because of the fact that she's a bigger than life personality. And so the Formation tour itself was that. I mean, she had this 6-story cube where she's putting her image on it, performing to stadiums, you know, stadiums as a woman by herself, which A, is unheard of. B, even more unheard of that it's a black woman doing it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so when you have, you know, a performance like Coachella, it's 155,000 people. As a huge fan of hers, there was a couple of things that I wanted. I wanted her to, A, play with her songs a little bit more. There's a joke amongst all the Beehive. You know, there's certain ad-libs that we know. There's certain dance steps that we certain know. You know, we know because she's they've become so much of the performance element of who she is. Right. So it's like, okay, you know we're going to get this, we're going to get that. And she completely threw us all for a loop, for everything. But, you know, I want to go back to when we were talking about tapping into the HBCU element of it and the references, because I took a lot of notes. And there were so many explicitly black references during this show. I mean, she gave a nod toward, you know, Spike Lee's School Days, yes. Fela Kuti, The yes. Wiz, Chopped and Screwed Hip Hop, yes. Malcolm X, Outkast, reggae music, swag surfing, Nina Simone, flexing. I mean, she was doing all of these different things in real time to say, this is me, this is my blackness, and this is where I'm from. South with an F, okay?
Yes, South.
And and it's something that I think in the past, I don't want to say that she's... No, I will say it. In the past, she shrunk some of that because she was chasing a certain type of pop stardom, and she achieved it. And I think we've seen in these last couple of years that she doesn't want to do that anymore because she doesn't have to, because she's operating on this other level where she's not judged so much by her hits, because she's not like a Rihanna that has 18 number one hits or all these things that she has, you know, or she's not like these other people who are selling 5, 6, 8, 10 million records in a couple of weeks. She doesn't have any of that, but what she does have is she leads the conversation with everything that she does. So to come on this stage and do this show specifically for black people, knowing that this whole white audience is going to watch it, may not know what it is, but they're going to talk about it and they're going to love it because it's her. And they're going to probably go back and Google these things. They're going to go back and research these things. I mean, that's a huge thing to do for someone. I mean, it's not like she didn't graduate from HBCU. I mean, her dad did. Mm-hmm. So she didn't have a responsibility to prop up HBCUs, you know, and I didn't go to one. I went to a primarily white institution, and what I loved about it was that it gave me moments of, oh, wow, you know, when it was homecoming and I was on a certain part of campus, this is the feel, this mm-hmm. is what I got. When I was on a certain part of campus with my people, this is what I got. So she was able to bring that feeling to the entire world, but also show the audience that this is a great thing. And I think that a lot of, and then I could be wrong here, I want Travelle to jump in on this, but I do think a lot of times that there's sort of a connotation that's come with, you know, HBCUs specifically, that it's sort of pushes against whiteness, mm-hmm. you know, or it's a bad thing against whiteness. And I do think that it was great of her to show what the culture is and what it's about, and that it's about celebrating who we are, all facets of who we are, and not being ashamed of who we are, and not having to shrink our existence to make room for anybody else.
Mm-hmm. It's about the safe space that historically our people needed
yeah.
in order to be able to pursue education, because we know what happened, for example, to slaves when they tried to learn how to read. It's about creating historically that safe space. But even present day, you know, there's been a lot of conversations around how, in fact, HBCU enrollment has increased over the last couple of years as we've been seeing, you know, all these conversations with Black Lives Matter and, you know, police brutality and some, you know, unsavory instances between white folks and black folks on predominantly white campuses. I think with Beyonce embracing kind of the HBCU narrative, it will introduce people, white, black, and in between, to what HBCUs are, their history, and their ongoing importance in kind of our broader sociopolitical climate.
Well, I know for myself, the way that I took the HBCU reference was simply Beyonce saying, I'm going to take you all to school. And I really, in a lot of ways, I wished I had a syllabus. Like, I wish was something to go through to be kind of like deciphering and getting what some of the references were, because they were like flying by really,
really fast.
It was a very dense performance.
Yeah.
But now, do you have some sense, Garrick, of Beyonce made a reference during the performance to the fact that she'd been dreaming about this performance for over a year? Do you think that's true? And do you have any sense of what her process is? Like, is there a script? Does she write these things out? Like, how does this thing come to be?
Yeah, I was talking to her team, and she was working on this for over a year, which is insane when you think about it, you know. But I think one of the things that I wanted to mention, which, and this could be just me pulling this out of the air, but I do think at some point she had to have thought about the reception that she got when she was at Super Bowl the last time, and that level of just vitriol thrown her way mm-hmm. when she came out and did something that was black, you know, and it was almost this moment of like, how dare you?
Right.
She was doing this thing that was, you know, a reference to both Michael Jackson and, you know, Malcolm X, mm-hmm. and it became this whole thing of like, well, she hates the police and she hates white people, and it was thrown right back at her, you know, really intensely, and she's somebody who's never really dealt with any of that kind of stuff before, like ever. And so I feel like a part of her probably had to think about the fact of like, okay, so they're like not paying attention to like what I'm trying to do, like the one time I'm like embracing, mm-hmm. you know, who I am after all this work that I've put in. And, you know, people say a lot of things like, well, you still have blonde hair, or you're still this, or you're still that. And so I think when she decided to go on that tour, I started to think about it, you know, that formation tour. A lot of times we saw her with braids more than we have in her mm-hmm. entire career. You know, we saw different outfits, you know, different things that she was doing that I just felt like she was leaning into things a little bit more. And so I think she decided, okay, Coachella, listen, this is a huge performance. Let's double down on this. You know,
first black woman to headline.
First black woman to headline. That performance really does capture everything she's done for the past 2.5, 3 years. It really does, every single thing. So it wasn't that much of a shock that she came out and like, this is going to be the theme. And I'm sticking to the theme for the entire show. What I'm interested in, though, is, I mean, the concept of homecoming, I mean, that's a one-time thing. You know, so when we go out there this weekend, is she going to do that theme for an audience that is not going to be watching online? It's going to only be people there, you know, and there's not that much reception there. So it's like she could really just do a whole new show if she wanted to. And we know Beyonce's the type of person that she just might have a whole new show planned.
I feel like she's going to give us a whole new show.
Just a whole new thing planned.
Because how can, you know, she brought out Destiny's Child, Jay, Solange. She could do the exact same show and we would get our lives,
and it would be fine, right?
We would get our lives. But Beyonce is just that bad of a you-know-what
right
to give us an entire but she's
always
show.
And she's always somebody who's like both timeless and of the moment at the same time. And so it would be, I don't know, I think I'd be really surprised if she did the same thing.
Right.
And I think she might use the fact that it's 2 weeks of the same show, but there's not this stream, so there's not this global audience. There's going to only just be this. She knows everybody who didn't go last week watch it online. She knows that. We already know that there's going to be new outfits, but I really wouldn't be surprised if it's like a whole new thing. Now, granted, I guess you could still do that exact same show without calling it homecoming. You know, you could still do that exact same thing and it works. But I don't know. I'm really interested to see what she's going to do.
She's going to give us something new.
And
I
do you have any sense that, I mean, she is going to be going on tour with Jay-Z coming up. Do you think any of this, the arrangements, the costumes, any of that will be recycled on that tour?
No, sir.
Not
Beyonce,
at all.
You know, she recycles some things, but I think just having followed her since the beginning, I think, A, she's going to do a whole new show this weekend. And then, of course, when it's on the run, I think we're going to see a whole different thing.
For you, as someone who's followed her career for a long time, is there an inflection point or like a turning point? Like, when did she become such a sort of total auteur and someone who's in such complete control of the music and the image making that she's putting out in the world? I mean, it seems, again, as a relatively casual Beyonce fan, it seems like it's been within the last few years that she just went to some whole other level. Is that the relationships in her life, the people that are around her? Like, what is it that caused her to suddenly just go to this other place?
You know, she talked about it a little bit in this documentary she did years ago with HBO, where separating from her father, who was such a huge part, because it wasn't just like he's manager. I mean, he really was top to bottom, you know, with everything with her. And so I think when she separated from him and when she did the 4 album, and that was an album that, you know, people came back and appreciated, but at the time it wasn't really a successful album. And that was when she had to take a step back, and she has said this and say, you know, I have to stop chasing radio. I have to stop chasing these things. And I just want to do what guides me. And the next thing we saw was self-titled, you know, which dropped in the dead of the night, visuals for everything. And it introduced this new Beyonce where she was completely in charge of her agency, her sound, her look, everything. It was her. She was picking everything, and she was also then showing us, you know, some of the behind the scenes too, where she was letting us in, and then you realize, oh wow, she really is, she has her hands on every single thing that she's doing. She's approving every single thing. This weekend there was this controversy of sorts about not wanting publications to run, you know, fan images, and it's like, yeah, she controls her image, but also what great artist hasn't? I mean, right. Prince did it. Michael did it. I mean, that's part of what this is, because part of who she is everything is telling a story. Visually is a story. My walk is a story. I mean, who else has such power in the way that they walk?
That's one thing I love so much about her, right, is like she hasn't done an interview in God knows how long. I think her last interview was for Ivy Park, when Ivy Park was coming out, and she really wanted that to be a success, right? But like she answers everything in her performances,
in her music.
So it's like, you want to know how she feels about, you know, Solange beating Jay up in the elevator? Listen to the music. You want to know how she feels about people talking about her child's hair? It's in the music.
It's like
she has mastered control of her art and her brand and who she is. We don't see black women often being able to do that. And
right.
I think that's one of the important things to highlight.
Well, Travelle, we were talking earlier about how her mother posted something to Instagram in which she quotes Beyoncé. Beyoncé's only public statement about the performance is from something from her mother's Instagram.
Yeah.
Right. And in the post, Miss Tina said that basically she warned Beyoncé about how she felt as if the audience might not get the performance and whether or not Beyoncé wanted to take on that burden. And according to Miss Tina, Beyoncé was like, basically, I don't care, and that they'll figure it out. It will hopefully get more people to reach out, do their history, do their research on this particular community and world.
Well, the quote is, I have a responsibility to do what's best for the world and not what is most popular. And Garrick, would you believe that as something that Beyoncé would say about the performance?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just looking back, I mean, same thing for Super Bowl, same thing for, you know, when she did Lemonade at MTV, the VMAs, where it's like, I'm going to do this whole album,
the
basically.
The entire,
you know,
album.
So, yeah, I mean, I do think that she's operating on this thing of recognizing the power that she has, seeing it, embracing it, you know, but also knowing that, you know, for all the power that she has, there's still stuff she's going to be kept out of. I mean, you know, yesterday, you know, with Kendrick getting the Pulitzer was a great example of that. Like, he ain't get the Grammy for Album of the Year,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's still this thing of, like, Black folks often are not awarded for their art that has informed the world. I mean, you look at how many people are inspired by Beyoncé. You look at how many people look to her and what they're doing. And it's not about getting credit, but she definitely sometimes isn't always talked about with the regards of, oh, she's someone who's influential. I mean, a lot of people think, well, you know, she's not really a musician because she's not playing a million instruments on stage. But it's like, look at the type of artistry that it does take to be able to say, I want all of this stuff. I want to do all these different things. You know, I want to incorporate all of these different things. I mean, just the level of dexterity, you know, that comes with her. And I mean, just watching that performance, I was tired by like the fourth song where I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Like, you just are doing all, and it's just nonstop. It's just nonstop. And that is powerful. And I think the image of that, I think about all the people that's watching at home, and like, I just couldn't imagine like being like a young Black kid, you know, and just watching, because when I was a young Black kid, I was like watching her in Destiny's Child, and it was
right.
Like, oh, okay, it was great, but we didn't see powerful Beyoncé. I didn't get to see powerful Beyoncé until, you know, this last decade. But I think of that little kid now that's seeing that, and it's like, how much has that changed them?
I just want to point out a tweet that I saw where they took like two screen grabs of the performance, and Beyoncé changed her nail color. I'm just saying.
Okay,
just
well,
the attention to the detail is
saying. But that though is because, you know, those pictures were from rehearsal. Well,
oh, were they?
Yes,
oh my God,
they were from rehearsal,
no.
And they were.
I'm hating now.
I know. Does it ruin it?
It does.
It does.
It does.
Huh? I shouldn't have said that.
It does. You
though.
Shouldn't. You should have let me. You should have
well,
let me live.
Magic is magic.
Magic is magic. Magic is magic.
But still, she's amazing. I think she has so much attention to detail that so many artists don't have. The power.
Is it unusual the way in which she drew in so many sort of outside influences, that she was including snippets of songs that are not her own? There was an interlude playing a Nina Simone song. The band at one point, as you pointed out, played a Fela Kuti song. Is that unusual for her to like be acknowledging not just the world of Beyoncé, but this sort of larger universe? The writer Doreen St. Felix at the New Yorker, she actually called it a global Black vernacular,
yes.
As far as what she was drawing from. And is that unusual?
It's not unusual. I mean, she's been doing that for a very long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, a very, very, very long time. It's always been, I mean, I think it's been a little more subtle. It's not been what it was this past weekend where it was like, oh, okay, we're like on the 25th like reference, and
right.
It's like, it's just mind-blowing. But I mean, there's certain flourishes that she's always had, you know, in her music that she's done on her live shows, yeah.
But can we talk about the transitions to the different songs, the interpolations of the other like hot current hits that are like right now that everybody's twerking to in the club?
It was
like,
it
this
was
woman
a lot.
Thinks about everything, even like you. I don't understand people who be like, you know, Beyoncé, you know, ain't the stuff. Like people who right. want to hate on her. How can you hate on, even if you don't like the music? That's fine.
That's
you ain't
fine.
Gotta like the music. But that artistry, okay, that command of a stage, that performance, come on. Who else is up there right now? Who else is up there right now? There's no one out there doing what she's doing on the level that she's doing. Male, female, black, white, in between. I don't care what you say.
No, it was spectacular. It was truly a spectacular performance. It really was. I mean, I'm like a huge like Destiny's Child fan, so like all I really wanted for the evening was a Destiny's Child reunion, and so it just...
She should have brought out LaToya and LaTavia too.
Okay, let's get into this because I am tired of people bringing this up. Why is this a thing for folks? DC3 were together far longer than DC4. So logically, it doesn't make any sense.
You're right.
To have the others.
I think people just would like to see that moment, you know, Beyonce just kind of giving a little glitter to LaTavia. Because LaToya's doing fine on her own. You know, she ain't set it off live right now. She getting her life, right? But like LaTavia's struggling.
But I don't.
She had a book last year, though.
But I don't know if that's necessary.
It's not.
Or if that's something that Beyonce's thinking about.
She ain't.
When you've done so much with this, it was this group. That was the group.
She ain't. You know, Beyonce's group. Like, you missed the gravy train, so, you know.
You missed the gravy train.
You missed the gravy train. That's what happened. But I'm just saying. Shout out to DC3.
I know. I should be sure to ask you both, did you have a favorite moment in the performance?
I had a lot of favorite moments. I think that old nasty breakdown for I'm gonna go stand on Destiny's Child when they went into the remix version of Say My Name, which led into Soldier. It was a heavy moment for me to deal with. It was a heavy moment. But from her, though, you know, actually, honestly, one of my favorite moments, I think, of the whole night, probably when she did Drunken Love on the Cherry Picker, and you are actually really just seeing her at this level that you can't touch her, and that's how we experience Beyonce so much. We see her on Instagram, we see her, you know, on these performances on our TV screen, and so I think seeing her up there flying around was a different feeling of like, oh, that's like what I'm used to, because outside of that, I mean, she was like 5 feet away, and like, it's a lot when Beyonce's like 5 feet away from you singing these songs, and like when she's doing Check On It and like her hair is almost hitting you, it's like, oh wow, like this is like a lot, because she really is like, it's hard to explain, like she truly, like I've seen Prince live and I got that same feeling from Prince. There's certain people that they don't feel human. Mm-hmm. Like Janet Jackson, like it doesn't feel like a human being. Like there's, it's something weird. I don't know if that's just a stan inside of me that's coming out right now in this room, but yeah, I mean, it's just something that's so breathtaking about watching her perform and watching her in that element and seeing what that moment was and seeing how big of a performance that was. Going to more favorite moments, I have another one too, where toward the end when it was like her outfit was like giving out on her, and like you can see, yes, this real human moment of Beyonce that's like, I'm gonna still get all these dance steps, but I want to make sure that I'm not falling out nowhere.
Right.
But then like the boots are falling down, and then it's like, oh, you start to realize, oh, she's human too. Mm-hmm. You know, like she deals with the same things that we deal with. I mean, not that we're ever in Balmain dancing anywhere.
Never.
But you know, it was great to see that. And you know, for her to still, she didn't stop, she didn't miss a single beat, and you're still dealing with a new level of respect where it's like, it's already probably challenging to do all of that. I mean, I'm obviously it has to be, but like to then have this other element, mm-hmm, of like your outfit's forsaken you and you're still hitting every movement.
And now before I forget, I want to be sure to ask you, tell me just a little bit about just the logistics of you watching the show. Did you have to kind of fight for a position in the field? Did you have is there a
y'all
press
see his
area?
Face right now.
Like, how was it that you got 5 feet from Beyonce?
Oh my gosh. So the thing with Coachella is like, so people camp out in the field. And my strategy was this, you know, Haim played before. I didn't think there would be that much of the same fan base from Haim into Beyonce. So I'm like, okay, if I get into like the front pit early during Haim, I can just continuously make my way over to the edge because I had seen the catwalk because they put it in that morning. So I knew, okay, so she's going to have the secondary stage. Cool. So when I got there earlier, it was like 3:00. People were already like camped out. And they were going to stand there in that hot, hot desert sun all day.
And she was scheduled to go on at 11.
11 o'clock.
PM.
This is 3 p.m. when I showed up there to go watch something else. And this girl, she had her little blanket, the whole thing. And so Beyonce had her own special VIP pit in the front, which we didn't know about at the time. So we're like seeing everything else in this little pit or whatever. So then we come back for Haim and we try to get low. We're going to go in that pit again. And they're like, oh no, this is the VIP for Beyonce only. This is only going to be her team. I hear Oprah was there in that pit. Shout out to Oprah.
Is that where Rihanna was?
That is where Rihanna was. Mm-hmm. 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 And so then behind the pit was just a general VIP. But like after Haim, no one left. And so it's like, oh. So you're just seeing this crush of bodies. And it's like, so then people started like sitting down and camping out because there was an hour intermission before Beyonce was going on. So it's like, you just are inching your way very slowly. And so, I mean, it's 11 o'clock and I mean, I'm shoved between a whole bunch of people stuck like this. And I'm like, well, once the music starts, people will just naturally start to gravitate as they move around in their shape. It was a lot of just trying to maneuver. And I was committed because I really wanted to see this catwalk action because it was an L-shaped catwalk and I wanted to be right in the middle because I wanted to be able to see all she was going to do. Also, I knew she was going to hit us with that formation dance sequence on that catwalk. It was a very specific thing that I needed to see. and it happened. I'm very sick for it now, but it was worth it.
And, Jarrell, do you want to hit me with some of your favorite moments from the show?
My favorite moments. I loved the quick Nina Simone bit where she had the two dancers just kind of dancing to Nina Simone. I loved the Black National Anthem. I literally screamed when she started singing. And then I think other than that, my favorite moment, unfortunately, has very little to do with her, but it was the probate scene where she brought out this team of guys that were
the
pledging. Yes, the bugaboos. I was like, okay, girl, I see you. It just took me back to being at Morehouse and like seeing a probate every week during the spring. It was just like a really good moment. Y'all should check out School Days, Spike Lee School Days. If you don't know anything that we've talked about, it at least will give you a little hint at something.
Yes.
And I'm going to be sure to represent for all the younger siblings out there. And when she brought out Solange, I thought it was extremely exciting.
Yes.
And also their dance together, I felt like, you know, they don't care if we're here or not. Like,
right.
I feel like they would be dancing like
dancing
this.
Dancing like that in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. 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 Or in the living room or at the cookout.
Very
you know.
Reminiscent of when Solange performed a couple years ago and Beyonce came out on stage. They did this little quick dance thing. It was so cute. Just a point about that. You had Solange there. Kelly was there. I would have really just loved just a little bit of the Proud Family theme song. They could have thrown in the I mean, come
might
on.
Have been too black.
Too black. Is that the limit?
It maybe, possibly, because nobody would have really got that except for a small.
Listen, I would have got it. I would have lived even more so.
You know, Solange does it at her show now.
Does she?
Yes.
Oh my God, I need to go check out Seat at the Table.
Well, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you online? Sure.
At Garrett Kennedy, GarrettKennedy.net. You can read me at The Times, all that good stuff.
You can pick up Garrett's book.
Oh, yes, buy the book. Parental Discretion is Advised on NWA. I should obviously write a Beyonce book at this point in my career.
Hello. And you can find me at Travell Anderson.
And so that will do it for today's lesson in Beyonceology. For the Los Angeles Times and The Real, I'm Mark Olson.